morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about a new business coming to Kalispell that intends to hire up to 100 people, wage growth, and an interview with Eric Dietrich of Montana Free Press about the correlation between job growth and if people were born in the state. It's Wednesday, September 4th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Fire crews on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation have counted 80-plus coal seam fires. This season, Olivia Reingold reports, some are new and have caused grass fires, while others date back decades.
As fire season has become longer and more intense, more coal seams are catching on fire. That's according to Adam Wolf, a fire management officer for the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Lame Deer. He says he's seen one or two coal seam fires throughout his 30-year career, but within the last
15, 20 years since we started having these big mega fires, I've seen a lot more.
Some of those fires are as small as a car hood, but four of them have led to grass fires this season on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. Wolf says the coal seam fire that began outside of Ashland on Sunday, the Burning Creek fire, was contained at less than 1 acre and isn't in danger of spreading into vegetation. Coal seam fires can occur naturally by lightning or have human-made starts. A Northern Cheyenne press release says it's impossible to extinguish a coal seam fire. That could explain this.
There is documentation of several fires here on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation that date back to the late 60s and early 70s.
Wolf says they burn throughout the winter, melting any snow piled on top. He says trying to smother the coal with dirt doesn't work. It just continues to burn underground. And he says the real problem is that they have no idea just how deep underground the burning coal seams go. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
Yellowstone National Park yesterday announced the elk rut has begun. The park advises visitors that bull elk can become extremely agile and dangerous during the mating period, which lasts into October. During the rut, bull elk show dominance to attract cows by aggressively charging each other and locking antlers. They make a distinctive sound called bugling, captured here by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Yellowstone National Park warns to keep at least 25 yards away from elk and to seek shelter behind a sturdy barrier like a vehicle if an elk charges. U.S. Interior Secretary David Bernhardt canceled a planned visit to Montana this week. As Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports, Bernhardt had planned to meet with Montana's ranchers and farmers about grizzly bear conflicts along the Rocky Mountain front as part of his visit.
Montana Congressman Greg Gianforte's office invited Secretary Bernhardt to the Rocky Mountain front during his scheduled time in Montana this week to visit with farmers and ranchers struggling with grizzly bear conflicts, but the Interior Department said the secretary canceled due to a scheduling conflict. Former president of the Montana Wool Growers Association, Dave McEwen, helped push for the secretary's visit to western Montana so he could see the issues related to a growing number of livestock killed by bears from the Northern Continental Divide Ecosystem, or NCDE.
We're not talking about Glacier Park or Bob Marshall. We're talking 90 miles from the edge of the recovery area and everything in between. That's the problem.
McEwen says the Wool Growers Association hoped the visit would lead to more funding for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services, which investigates depredation of livestock by wildlife. Those investigations help livestock producers in most cases get reimbursed for depredations through a state board. McEwen says the agency is struggling to handle the growing grizzly problem amid budget cuts. Livestock producers also fund a substantial portion of Wildlife Services budget in Montana through self-imposed fees, and more conflicts mean more money out of livestock producers' pockets. Wildlife Services says it investigated 16 reports of grizzly bear depredation statewide in 2016. That number hit 138 last year. Even though the Interior Secretary doesn't oversee Wildlife Services' parent agency, USDA, the Wool Growers Association wants to make a case for more federal funding through a cooperative agreement the agency has with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Of which Secretary is charge of.
The Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks also works with Wildlife Services on depredation investigations and handles day-to-day conflicts. Bear biologist Cecily Costello says the increase in livestock depredations along the eastern edge of the NCDE are a byproduct of grizzly bears nearly doubling their range.
The estimated occupied range for the NCDE grizzly bear population is almost 25,000 square miles, which is a 42% increase from what we estimated in 2004. And it's a 25% increase from what we estimated in 2010.
McEwen with the Wool Growers Association hopes Interior Secretary Bernhardt will be able to reschedule a visit to the state to see the problem for himself, something the Interior Department said in an emailed statement will happen in the near future. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio.
Three LGBT pride banners were stolen and destroyed over the weekend. Despite the act of intolerance, 406 Pride, organizer of Billings Pride, is resolved to celebrate. I found out more. The first banner went missing over Labor Day weekend. Shauna Goubeau, president of 406 Pride, thought it was an isolated incident.
Didn't think much about it. We went around yesterday, made sure the other two were fine, and then sometime between yesterday afternoon and this morning, somebody decided to slash the other two with knives.
The banners hanging outside Billings West High School, Lewis and Clark Middle School, and Senior High promoted LGBT Pride events scheduled for this Saturday. Billings Pride will proceed as planned. The celebration includes a pride parade down 2nd Avenue and a family-friendly festival at North Park with over 50 vendors, 5 food trucks, and live music. Country musician Shelley Wright will perform after the festival at an open-to-the-public concert. The day will end with a drag show featuring local drag performers and James Mansfield of RuPaul's Drag Race, along with dance parties at the Red Lion Ballroom and The Loft. 406 Pride spent their entire $400 marketing budget on the three banners. Purple Snow Promotional will replace the banners free of charge by Wednesday. Goubeau says,
and we intend to hang them right back up. Because, like I said, we're not going to back down. We're not going to be intimidated. We're going to keep marching forward for equality.
The vandalism hit especially hard because of the message it might send to LGBT students, Goubeau said.
We put the signs there with the intent of giving them the message that it's okay to come out and that it's going to be safe. And this happens. So that kind of breaks my heart.
Lieutenant Brandon Woolley with the Billings Police Department said they are investigating the incident. He said, quote, "These hateful activities have no place in our community," unquote. BPD noted other banners displayed in the same area as 406 Pride's banners were not vandalized. Shauna Goubeau with 406 Pride said,
I hope that Billings will show up and show those people that Billings is better.
For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. A new business coming to Kalispell says it intends to hire up to 100 people during its first year of operations. More than twice that number may eventually be hired on. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
The company called SoClean will start its Kalispell operations early next month. It sells devices to clean and sanitize CPAP machines. CPAP, that stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure. CPAP machines treat obstructive sleep apnea, a condition that hampers the ability to breathe while sleeping.
It's very, very effective at treating the condition. In fact, I'm a CPAP user myself.
SoClean Chief Information Officer Keith Brown.
And I can tell you from personal experience, it's a very difficult machine to clean.
SoClean's products clean and sanitize CPAP machines without the need for disassembly, liquids, or chemicals. Brown says the New Hampshire-based company founded in 2011 is growing by leaps and bounds and needs a second North American office.
It's primarily going to be sales, customer service, some technical folks, and I imagine we'll have eventually, you know, marketing and other areas of the company here in Kalispell also.
Brown says the long-term goal is to hire at least 250 employees.
Our starting wage is $15 an hour plus benefits, so the company has a good benefit, both medical as well as things like a 401k plan.
Brown has lived in the Flathead Valley since the early 90s.
The Flathead Valley has a very, very good talent pool. as Montanans here. We love, you know, the beautiful natural landscape we have and the ability to play outdoors. It really fits well with our company culture and wanting to provide employees that good work-life balance.
The company is purchasing a 78,000 square foot building in the Kalispell area, but Brown would not offer specific location details, citing final real estate negotiations. The Montana Department of Commerce provided two $5,000 grants to SoClean, one for workforce training, the others offered to companies that plan to develop well-paying jobs. SoClean is hosting a job recruitment fair this Thursday at Kalispell Spring Hill Suites on Old Reserve Drive from 3 to 7. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Wage growth in Montana was sixth fastest in the nation over the last decade. That was one among a number of rosy statistics shared by the Bullock administration during its release of the 2019 Labor Day report yesterday. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
Governor Steve Bullock stood in the lecture hall of the Helena College Airport campus praising Montana's workforce and economic growth seen in the state since the end of the Great Recession.
Our economy is strong on Labor Day 2019. It'll continue to be strong because of folks like you've heard about throughout this presentation, both in this room and across our state.
According to the Montana Department of Labor and Industry, Montana's annual average wages increased by $10,000 from 2009 to 2018. The report notes that the current economic expansion is now the longest in recorded U.S. history. Bryce Ward, an economist with the University of Montana and founder of ABMJ Consulting, says the state's economy over the last decade has done well.
Now, not everywhere and not for every person, but kind of the big picture aggregate is Montana's economy has been reasonably healthy in the recent past. The big question that we don't know is should we assume that how healthy we are at this exact moment and, you know, how healthy we'll be in 5 to 6 months or 12 months from now? Only time will tell.
Ward says economic indicators show the labor market is strong, but some business investment and financial markets show confidence in the national economy is weakening. Over the last decade, state data reports that the southwest region of the state has seen the greatest percentage of payroll employment growth, followed by northwest Montana. Central and eastern portions of the state have seen significantly less job growth. Montana, like other states, is facing a tight labor market as the baby boomer generation retires. Officials say Montana will lean, in part, on people moving to the state to fill the opening jobs. They say the trend of more people retiring each year than joining the workforce could continue through 2025. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio.
A recent news article found that parts of Montana with more people who were not born in the state have higher job growth. Eric Dietrich wrote the story for Montana Free Press as one of the state's only data reporters. He spoke with me about how he takes data and turns it into stories for the Long Streets Project. What is the Long Streets Project, and when did Montana Free Press decide to start covering this?
It's an effort to cover the Long Streets economy of the state, where we have a bunch of small towns with really long streets in between them. And we're trying to get at the economic issues that come up in a long streets economy like that. The national trend is towards wealth and talent being pulled into big cities right now. And so the idea is to like try to understand how are people making businesses work, and how does that fit in with demographic data like the stuff I was looking at with this piece.
So where do most of the jobs in Montana generally come from?
The jobs, like the people actually, tend to be clustered in cities. If you look at not only like where the jobs are, but also where the job growth has happened since the turn of the century, most of the growth has happened in cities. If you're a business leader or a chamber of commerce leader in a rural community, it's easy to look around and say, oh my gosh, is my town getting left behind? One of the questions we're trying to address with the Long Streets Project is for the people that are in that situation, what ideas are out there for them to tackle that? What are people trying? Is that actually working?
So how do you use the data that you collect and transform it into these narrative pieces about Montana jobs and the economy of the state?
In a technical sense, I code. This nativity piece that we're talking about, I wrote some Python that pulled in the data from the Census Bureau and then reshaped it in the form that answered the precise question I wanted to answer. And then I piped that into some other code that then produced the maps in the piece. The storytelling is really more qualitative. So like I've been to like Roller Valley County where this story indicates that a significant number of people are not born in state. And talked to people there and gotten a sense for what the culture's like. And then, you know, that didn't necessarily come directly through in this piece, but it definitely informs like what questions you then turn around and ask the data. As the map in the piece indicates, the county in the state that has the most residents born outside Montana is actually River Valley County, where 29% of residents were born in the state, and 71% not. There's kind of that pattern across western Montana. But then you look at like which portions of the state have the most Montana-born residents. And it's oftentimes north central Montana, the northeast corner of the state, and also the counties that happen to overlap with reservations, like Glacier County, for example, which includes both Cutbank and also most of the Blackfeet Reservation. More than three quarters of the adults there were born in Montana. We also found that there's been a strong correlation between how many people are from elsewhere and job growth. The places that have more Montanans born outside the state tended to have high job growth.
I really love the graphics that are included in these stories. I did not realize that you had done that by sitting at a computer and writing code to make that.
No, thank you. Yeah, it's an important toolkit, I think, and it's one we should have more in media. Data increasingly drives the way we think about how we do what we do and make decisions. And in media, we need to be able to understand that. We also need to like understand that without losing context of that we're actually talking about real people, and understand that the data ain't always perfect too.
What would you say is the most challenging issue that Montanans are facing when it comes to our job growth and our economy?
I don't know that I have a good answer for that, in part because like it's complicated stuff, and my job is to listen and try to understand the complexity. I do worry a lot about what the future looks like for rural communities in the state, when I say rural, I mean not like Three Forks, which is a half hour outside Bozeman within the commuting radius of the fastest growing economy in the state. But I worry about the communities in the state that are more isolated, and what the future looks like for the people there. If you're a community leader in Shoto or Ekalaka or Glasgow, like, what can you do to help ensure that your community thrives in the long run? There is a have-not economic divide in the state between the urban and the rural. And so you have this divide, and what do you do about it? I've been thinking about this and trying to report on this about this as much as I can for 2 years now, and starting to find some answers, I think, but there's definitely a lot of work left to be done.
Thanks for taking the time to talk with me today.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
That was Eric Dietrich, a reporter for the Montana Free Press. For more information about the Long Streets Project, go to our website, ypradio.org. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.